We're at the intersection of Social Security Disability Insurance, or SSDI, and unemployment assistance here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Back in 2013, Wisconsin passed a law that says people who receive SSDI cannot at the same time receive unemployment benefits if they're laid off. And now there's a class action lawsuit seeking to overturn the law and recoup some benefits. How do you feel about SSDI recipients being eligible for unemployment benefits? Are you or a loved one in this exact situation? 800-642-1234. We have two attorneys who filed a federal class action lawsuit in the Western District of Wisconsin on behalf of some Wisconsin workers with disabilities. Victor Forberger is a labor and employment attorney. Victor, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
And Paul Kinney is here as well, partner at Gingras Thompson & Walks. Paul, welcome to you.
Thank you.
So, Paul, let's start with you. Why did you take on this case? Why did you bring it?
Well, we are looking for justice, not just for the clients named in the complaint, but for all disabled people who are getting SSDI. Wisconsin's unemployment compensation law is designed to compensate workers who lose their job through no fault of their own, to tide the worker over until they can find new work. And it's both wrong and illegal to treat disabled people differently from anybody else.
Victor, can you give us some context of the history here on how this law came to be?
Well, the law was originally started with a department proposal, which is, first of all, highly unusual. A major change in the law is coming from the department as opposed to from workers or from management folks, and that create this eligibility ban, because the idea back then was that disabled people supposedly don't work at all. And it got implemented, and it turns out disabled people actually do work, especially after they get approved for SSDI, because the SSDI benefit is usually pretty low. The average in Wisconsin is around $1,200 a month. So even on that average amount, imagine trying to pay your rent and buy your groceries all on just $1,200 a month. Mm-hmm. So people need to work in order to supplement that. And that's what they're doing. Unfortunately, right now, because of this eligibility ban, they cannot get unemployment benefits when they lose their jobs. So they are... And that's a right all workers have when they lose their jobs, but it's not available to them. So they are essentially starving till they can find another job.
Well, let's look at this closely here, because SSDI and unemployment benefits are supposed to serve two distinct groups, two distinct populations. Unemployment benefits paid to people who are willing and able to work but are laid off, unable to find work. And then on the other hand, SSDI for people who are unable to work. I'm wondering here, Paul, is the pandemic's economic fallout revealing that unemployment insurance and disability benefits are essentially at odds with one another?
To some degree, yes. And the pandemic has certainly drawn attention to that contradiction. But honestly, it always existed. That's because the rules at the Social Security Administration specifically allow people who receive SSDI benefits to also work. That's baked into the law. So Wisconsin's law that says, well, if you get SSDI benefits, you can't get unemployment compensation benefits, is in direct contradiction with that rule.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Paul Kinney and Victor Forberger. They're employment law attorneys who've sued the state in federal court, hoping to overturn a restriction on unemployment benefits for people with disabilities. You can join in. Do you receive SSDI? And did you lose your job during the pandemic, only to find you were not eligible for unemployment benefits? What did you do? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Victor, how many Wisconsin residents with disabilities are employed, and how many receive SSDI?
We don't know the number right now. I've got a number on my website. I've found out a couple days ago that's wrong. So it's somewhere between less than 150,000 and somewhere more than 3,500.
And why aren't there exact numbers here? I mean, why is that unclear? When are the numbers filed each year?
They're not. Fortunately, they're not being filed, not being tracked. So we only have data from the Social Security Administration about the number of people who qualify for SSDI benefits from their prior work history.
Ah,
that's the 150,000 number.
I see.
And then I know from the department back in 2015, they said that 3,500 people have been denied unemployment assistance because of the SSDI eligibility ban.
So let's look at the federal level, Paul. Congress did try to fix this with the Reducing Overlapping Payments Act that was introduced somewhere around 2015 by then Arizona Senator Jeff Flake. What has been the guidance or the action from the federal government to states on this?
There really hasn't been any explicit guidance to the states beyond what's set forth in the rules and in the laws that apply to Social Security recipients getting SSDI and unemployment compensation. The federal government has made it pretty clear to states that SSDI beneficiaries can receive both. But Wisconsin is one of only two states in the country that simply disallows it, that says if you're getting SSDI benefits, you're automatically disqualified from getting unemployment compensation benefits. And that also has to do a little bit with the way unemployment compensation benefits are paid, which are paid weekly, and Social Security disability insurance benefits, which are paid monthly.
Okay, so different timelines there. Is it possible, Paul, that someone who loses their job, who is on SSDI, who would apply for unemployment benefits and get them, would they have to pay that money back or pay a fine?
If they were on Social Security disability benefits and somehow the state did not realize that they were getting the SSDI benefits, yes. The history has been since 2013 that the Unemployment Compensation Office, the Department of Workforce Development, will compel those workers to return the money they received and typically also pay a penalty.
Have any of your plaintiffs been in that position?
Yes. Several of our plaintiffs have received benefits only later to be ordered to return that money and also pay a penalty. Part of the relief we're seeking is to compel the state to reimburse those plaintiffs for the money that they were forced to pay back and refund the penalty with interest.
Let's take a call on this. Nick joining us from Green Bay this morning. Hi, Nick. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. First, thanks for your work. I support your cause. And the second is, you know, I see the disability benefit. You said it's about $1,200 a month, plus minus. And you're not eligible for disability if you earn more than $1,200 a month, plus minus. I mean, are the sums of money we're talking about to the state even appreciable? Is this even worth arguing about? Why do we think we put this in place? Is this like a moral standpoint, or is it really about dollars and cents?
Nick, thank you. Victor, you first.
For the state, this probably is not that much money, though for employers, they're not paying unemployment taxes if their employees can't, if their disabled employees can't collect unemployment benefits. So this is one of the problems is we're actually, employers are not paying their fair share then based on their disabled workers not collecting. And for the disabled workers, again, this is the difference between starving and being able to feed yourself. So It is a major factor. I just want to also add too, is the regulations for able and available were decades ago changed to accommodate disabled workers. And so Wisconsin unemployment law actually is oriented towards allowing disabled workers to work up to what their disability allows. So this disability ban now that was implemented in 2013 goes against a whole part of how unemployment law is supposed to function.
Paul, do you have any thoughts there on what Nick in Green Bay was saying?
Yes. First of all, there definitely is a moral component to what we're doing. But more technically, with respect to the amounts, that's why we filed a class action lawsuit. Class action lawsuits are designed to compensate people when, if they were going to bring their own lawsuit, the amounts at issue would probably not be worth the investment of time and resources. But when you take everybody who's been affected similarly and put them together, then suddenly that does become a large enough sum of money to make it worth the effort. So that's why we've done this as a class action lawsuit. Because when you take the total harm done by denying these SSDI beneficiaries their rightfully earned unemployment compensation benefits, it definitely is something worth noticing.
We have employment and labor law attorneys Paul Kinney there and Victor Forberger sued the state of Wisconsin in federal court seeking to overturn its ban on people with disabilities from receiving unemployment benefits. Are you a loved one in this situation? What do you think of this ban? What do you think about this class action suit seeking retroactive benefits? Join in your thoughts, 800-642-1234. We'll talk more in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're discussing a class action lawsuit filed this month that asserts that our state's unemployment system discriminates against people with disabilities. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to Social Security Administration data from 2019, more than 170,000 Wisconsinites benefited from the SSDI program, Social Security Disability Insurance, and thus were automatically disqualified from receiving state unemployment benefits. Do you support this ban or find it unlawful? Are you receiving SSDI while working? What can you say about the program? 800-642-1234. We have attorneys in the federal suit, Victor Forberger and Paul Kinney. They stay with us for 9 more minutes. I want to follow up here on the nature of a class action lawsuit, Paul. You know, not everyone who goes on SSDI has the privilege of having an attorney who can navigate the bureaucracy for them and look out for their best interests and, you know, ensure they're abiding by the law in taking SSDI. Would overturning this law help to simplify the system?
Absolutely, it would. Then SSDI recipients would not need to be concerned with the simple receipt of those benefits to disqualify them for unemployment compensation benefits. They would go through the application process like any other employee and be eligible to receive those benefits either for the same reasons or for not the same reasons that any other person who applies for those benefits would be.
Victor, with this class action suit, can you explain how many people you're representing now, and would you be adding plaintiffs here?
I think there's seven or eight named plaintiffs in the lawsuit right now. I've been doing a pro bono representation for a lot of folks right now who receive SSDI benefits and haven't been able to get unemployment benefits. I've just said is I'm going to get a lot more phone calls from folks. Please, if you call me up, try and be patient, understanding, because a lot of people are calling me up. It's a very unemployment is, you know, what Paul said about hoping to make this system easier to use. One of the things that's come out of this is how complicated and difficult the unemployment system is to navigate. People are forced to use the portal if they need help and they can't use the computer systems to file their weekly certifications or their initial claims. I'm telling them they have to use magic words when they talk on the phone. They have to say, I have a disability and I need your assistance. If they don't say those magic words, then they're told to go back to the portal. Mm. People don't have online access the way that people in the upper middle classes and fast broadband connections might have. So it's been extremely difficult for a lot of people and extremely cumbersome. And they've just been caught up in the administrative complexities.
Let's take another call. Becky in Hustaford. Hi, Becky. What is your situation?
Hello there. Thank you so much for taking my call. My mother had polio when she was 9 years old and unfortunately had to wind up mainstreaming herself for a large part of her life. When she was living in the late 40s and 50s, there were no programs for people with disabilities. And so she was an advocate for her entire life. She managed to go to college, get a degree, raise a family, and worked for the Wisconsin Vocational Technical College as a business instructor. Unfortunately, much of the able world, or the differently abled world, doesn't realize that persons with disabilities are often not only dealing with the complexities of their disability, but with extreme additional expenses in dealing with those disabilities, whether it be orthopedic shoes, braces, wheelchairs, special physiological or physical therapy or medical treatments, all of those things that someone with easy access to a job who gets laid off may find it easy to find another job. But for someone with a disability who has a job and is working hard and yet has all these additional complications to their life, for them not to be able to receive basic unemployment benefits when they're laid off for reasons of no fault of theirs, seems like it would be a terrible violation of the AODA, among other laws at the federal and state level. I think if someone with a disability is treated differently in their unemployment circumstances, that is a blatant act of prejudice against them. Thank you.
Becky, thank you for the call and sharing the experiences of your mother. And I want to go to you first, Victor, and talking about these extreme expenses that just go unnoticed and the importance of showing this.
Yeah, I can't say that better what was Becky just said. I mean, she's spot on. One of the things with the SSDI program is after 2 years on the SSDI program, recipients become eligible for Medicare assistance. And that helps with some of those medical expenses. But as we all know, Medicare has been pared back. And so there are still many out-of-pocket expenses that people have to pick up. So what Becky said is very true. And one of the issues why we're fighting this case.
And Paul, you know, it echoes what you have said about discrimination that you see in taking on this case.
That's absolutely right. The country has a shameful history of the way it has treated disabled people. And this lawsuit is a chance for society and for the state of Wisconsin to do something right and to make up at least in a little bit little part of that injustice. So we're really hoping that we can achieve that justice for our clients.
We're talking with Paul Kinney and Victor Forberger, employment law attorneys who have sued the state in federal court as they work to overturn a law on restricting unemployment benefits. Let's go to Jim in Juneau. Jim, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. So they're already getting Social Security, and they're wanting to receive unemployment benefits. Are these benefits on top? So if you are don't have disabilities and you work, and say you work one day that week, you can claim unemployment and receive the equivalent of, between the two, whatever the unemployment amount is for that state.
Yeah, let's let Paul give some clarity there. Go ahead, Paul.
The unemployment compensation law is designed to provide unemployment compensation benefits in relation to the number of hours you work. The number of hours you're allowed to work and still get SSDI benefits is, well, there is a limit. So that, again, the idea that you're going to double dip is impossible. That isn't accurate because the Social Security rules already prevent that from happening. In other words, unemployment compensation benefit applicants would only be seeking to get unemployment compensation benefits based upon their work history and eligibility that anybody else would have if they were working that number of hours per week.
Paul and Victor, thank you both for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
Paul Kinney, Victor Forberger, employment and labor law attorneys. We reached out to the Department of Workforce Development about this suit. They pointed out the governor's biennial budget proposal had included language that would have ended the exclusion of SSDI recipients to the unemployment benefits program. And the governor's proposal was removed by Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee. News update is next on the Ideas Network. You're with us for The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. This year marks the program's 10th anniversary on WPR. And as part of the celebration, here's producer Maureen McCollum sharing a story about siblings. It was part of a project that allowed high school students to tell their own stories on Wisconsin Life called Classroom Frequency.
Earlier this year, I started working with students at Monona Grove Liberal Arts Charter School, or MG21. The goal was to get more high school students' stories on the airwaves. When I first showed up in the classroom, there was one student who seemed to be particularly interested in creating radio and interviewing people.
Like, I'm always that person, and I always keep, like, asking questions. Like, it's uncomfortable for me to be quiet and uncomfortable for me to not have a conversation, so my brain is always running.
Junior Sierra Reederer had like 4 story ideas on day one, which is impressive. Stories about school lockdowns and charter schools. Ultimately, Sierra decided to work on a story about her brother, 13-year-old Thomas. I went to her house one night as Sierra was teaching Thomas how to play pool.
Wanna grab your stick, bub?
Yes.
Oh, shoot.
What other games do you like to play?
We like playing Minecraft.
Minecraft!
Do you like watching movies?
Yeah!
What's your favorite thing to eat?
Gosh, your fried root beer.
Grilled cheese, fries, and what?
Root beer.
I decided to do my brother because I love him. My brother has Down syndrome and how that affects like our family and how he's not really different from like anyone else. But at the same time, he is. I don't know, my brother's just an interesting person, so I was like, why not do the interesting person in my life?
Sierra then went on to interview her mom and grandma about Thomas. Let's listen to parts of those conversations.
I'm Sierra Reeder, and I'm here sitting with Shirley Drew and my grandma at her house in her kitchen, and we're going to talk about my little brother Thomas and how his Down syndrome has affected him or not affected him, and just a little bit about him. So to start off, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Great, okay. Do you remember the feelings you had when you were told that Thomas had Down syndrome?
I probably didn't have any real feelings. I just thought, okay, what can we do for him to make his life better?
What are some of the best memories that you've had with Thomas?
When we're in the car and he puts in the CD, and right now, today, it's Johnny Mathis, a Christmas CD.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
And we sing these songs each time he gets in the car, 365 days out of the year. I love it.
Why do you love Thomas so much?
He's made my life fuller, and he's never angry. Doesn't matter what, generally he does not hold a grudge. For that reason alone, I love him.
I'm Sierra Reeder, and I'm here with my mom, Michelle Reeder, in our office, and I'm going to interview her about some questions about my little brother, Thomas. Why do you love Thomas so much? Besides from the fact that he's your own kid.
You know, he just brings another spin on life. you know, when you're not having those good days, then he kind of can turn it around sometimes.
What challenges come with having a child with Down syndrome? Sorry, I didn't mean to make you cry.
Not knowing what the future holds for him. You know, making sure everything is in place, you know, when he gets to be to the point of independence. So when the day comes that we're not here anymore, he can still navigate the world.
I told him if he ever wants to come live with me, he has me.
That was MG21 Junior Sierra Reederer talking with her family about her brother Thomas. To hear her full interviews, check out our hour-long special, Classroom Frequency, Student Stories from Wisconsin, or visit wisconsinlife.org. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And now to a proposed solar farm in Dane County, southeast of Madison. The Koshkonong Solar Center is being billed as the largest renewable energy facility in the state and is before the Public Service Commission for consideration. The PSC says it's reviewing the project with no firm schedule as to a decision date at this time. Do you live in the Cambridge, Deerfield, Edgerton region of Dane County? How do you feel about the solar farm proposal? It's 800-642-1234. Brendan Conway is spokesperson for WEC Energy Group. Its subsidiaries are We Energies and Wisconsin Public Service. Brendan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
It is wonderful to be here, and thank you for playing that previous story. It really brightened my day, so thank you so much.
It always makes me cry, too. You know, WEC Energy Group and Madison Gas and Electric have proposed to purchase the solar farm for $649 million. Why did WEC decide to invest in this project?
Well, it's important to understand kind of the end game or our goals. So we have incredibly aggressive, some of the most aggressive goals in the entire industry to reduce carbon emissions, create that bright, sustainable future that we've been working so hard on for a number of years. We plan to reduce our carbon emissions 60% by 2025, 80% by the end of 2030, and be net zero electric generation by 2050. In order to do those things, which are incredibly important, we need to transition away from some of those older, less efficient fossil fuel units. We've announced closing a number of them, but we need to replace that generation with something. You know, when people go in the morning to turn on their coffee maker or flip their lights on, or certainly in the wintertime when it's, you know, cold, or in the summertime when it's hot, that AC, they want to know that that's going to work. And so we need to create a new generation. And so we've announced a number of plans, including the Koshkonong plan to buy that. That's a solar battery park. And it's going to really help us replace some of the older fossil fuel generation and make sure that people still have that affordable, reliable, and clean energy they need.
Yeah, in this new generation, as you say, how do you factor in solar and other renewables as you decommission coal? Are they able to be a reliable replacement at this point in putting renewables on the grid?
So luckily, we have really talented people who look into the future and can understand, you know, energy usage, time, day, when it's most needed. And so what we have is what we call a diverse fuel mix. So our future plans and our current plans include solar. We have wind. We have natural gas generation. We have some coal still in our fleet. We have a biomass plant. We have hydro. So we have all of those things help make sure that kind of no matter what's happening, if the wind isn't blowing, well, great news. We maybe have a natural gas plant that can fill that in. Or in the nighttime, when the sun obviously isn't shining, we're proposing some batteries for sunshine after sunset to make sure that we can keep that solar power for a few hours and provide it in the night. So, you know, we need to have all the kind of all above strategy to make sure that people have the energy that they depend on. Because most people, they don't generally care that much where it's coming from, right? They just want to know that their lights are going to work when they need it.
Yeah, they're not really concerned as to the mix of resources perhaps
right.
going on. So going back to solar, if this goes through, if it's constructed, this solar project would be the largest renewable energy facility in Wisconsin, could power nearly 80,000 homes. How does a solar farm connect to the grid and, you know, distribute that energy to homes?
So one of the things we look for when we look at, and again, I should say we, I mean, oftentimes we're working with these developers who go out and start to develop it, including the case of the Koshkonong, that's Invenergy, the developer, but they're looking to make sure that they, it connects to, you know, a transmission network or get into the grid basically, right? So all those solar panels, they all tie together, you know, and then they feed into the grid. And then that kind of feeds into really, really the regional transmission network, which, happy to get into that if you want. It's a little bit more complicated, but basically it's all drawing from all the customers who are part of that regional transition network, including most customers in Wisconsin. The energy could really be coming from anywhere, but they're kind of pulling out of that pool of energy that's being fed in from all over the state. Solar power is really not a whole lot different from any other type of generation. It's created a little differently, but by the time it gets to your home, it's really the same thing that's generated, been the same way for 100 years or so.
So explain how Invenergy, which is this Chicago-based firm, would build this and then ultimately turn it over or sell it. How does that work?
So this is what we've been doing. A lot of the other utilities in Wisconsin have been doing now for a number of years, because it takes the risk off of the customers. So what these developers do, and Invenergy is a well-known clean energy developer. They've been around for a long time, been doing this. They go and they kind of work with homeowners. First of all, they're going to look at a location. They need to find a few things. Available land, and by available, you know, people who would be willingly to lease their land, close to a transmission network, because if it's not close and it's going to require an expensive, you know, tie into a transmission network, that might be a strike against the project. And then a place that's obviously for solar that's sunny. So most farmland, I suppose, would qualify as that. And they go and they kind of work through the project. They get landowners on board. They work with the Public Service Commission. And then assuming the Public Service Commission approves that project, then we have a separate docket with the Public Service Commission, which allows us then to purchase that. So in the end, our customers, and this, you know, goes into the rate base, our customers benefit from this by not taking on those early discussions with, you know, you can spend a lot of money going through and talking to landowners, trying to find the right land, and it might all fall apart. So Invenergy takes on that risk, and not our customers. And in the end, our customers benefit from getting that clean, renewable energy.
We're talking with Brendan Conway, a WEC Energy Group, about a proposed solar farm in Dane County. Let's go to Cole now in Sun Prairie. Hi, Cole. What would you like to ask?
Yeah, I was wondering if there was any additional built-in infrastructure enhancements to this project. You know, one of the issues with residential solar is the load balancing to the grid that has to be, you know, that they have to be concerned with. So I'm just curious if there's additional infrastructure that's going to be built as part of this project to handle those load balances and stuff.
Cole, thank you. And Brendan, if you wouldn't mind also explaining what that load balance to the grid means.
Yeah, so I'm not 100% sure exactly what he's speaking to, and then the technical side. I guess what I can say is, you know, the good news is we have already have some experience. We already are owner, along with Madison Gas and Electric, of the state's first solar project, large-scale solar project, Two Creek Solar Project in Manitowoc County. That's about 150 megawatts. That's been up and running since November. We have the Badger Hollow Solar Project in southwestern Wisconsin in Iowa County, which is about 300 megawatts. That's currently being built. Some of it's starting to come online here this fall. So, you know, we already have some great experience with this. And, you know, these large-scale solar projects are not necessarily new. Some of the improving technologies that we have are new parts. So it's something that utilities are used to as far as making sure that they're safe. This one would be a little bit new. The part of it is the battery part, that it's going to feed into those batteries, which can then feed into the grid. I guess what I would say is any of the technical or safety things we're well versed with and will be part of this project.
Cole, does that help?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Cole, thank you for the call. As we talk with Brendan Conway, spokesperson for Milwaukee-based WEC Energy Group, it's one of the utilities in line to purchase the proposed Koshkonong Solar Energy Center, a solar farm under consideration by state regulators that would be located in Dane County. How would you feel living near a large solar farm? Would you support the project? Is there a particular place solar farms would work best in the state? Still time to talk, 800-642-1255. 1234. Back in a minute with Brendan Conway here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing a large solar farm proposed for Dane County called the Koshkonong Solar Energy Center. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A Chicago-based developer is seeking a permit from the State Public Service Commission to build and sell the project to a utility. WEC Energy Group is one of the utilities named in the PSC docket. Timeline, if the permit goes through, according to the PSC, construction could get underway in the spring with a completion date by the end of 2024. How do you feel about solar farms and the power they generate? Where should they be located? And what is the impact to the land and landowners? 800-642-1234. Brendan Conway is spokesperson for WEC Energy Group and stays with us. So, Brendan, residents who oppose the Koshkonong project say it would change the rural landscape of Cambridge, decrease property values, and they say living near a large electricity-generating facility would be unsafe. What is your response?
Sure. So, I mean, a lot there to address. I would say on the property values thing, and let me take a step back. We fully understand anytime there is a new project proposed in a community, people are going to have questions and oftentimes concerns. That is not unusual. We were some of the first developers of some of the first large scale wind farms back in the mid 2000s and very similar questions and concerns back then. What I think you've seen is that oftentimes some of the people who were the most vocal and had the most questions at the beginning become the strongest supporters of these projects once they're up and running. We have not seen any impact to property values negatively. Oftentimes, actually, property values are going to increase because when these projects come into the community, you know, our employees who work on these projects and are part of they're part of the communities where they work, right? They volunteer their time and their talent. Our company, we take an active role in supporting the communities through whether it's charitable giving, economic development efforts. We understand the neighbors are going to have those questions, and we work hard to address those questions in all sorts of ways, one-on-one conversations, public meetings, other community outreach. I do have to say this project's a little bit different. Again, this is Invenergy. This Koshkonong is an Invenergy project. So they're going through all of those issues right now. So I can't speak specifically to any one landowner concern just because we're not part of those conversations right now. But generally, that's how we approach these large projects.
Generally, then what is it that brings landowners around from being completely opposed to a project like this to being on board with it?
Well, you know, I would say the fact that Invenergy has moved forward, and this has been the case with all of our projects that we've had, and we've worked with Invenergy on a number of other projects, the landowners who they have, who they're leasing the land from, those landowners are doing it willingly, right? They're happy to do it. So I think it's important to distinguish that while you have some people in the community who, again, have questions about it, which is understandable, and let's work through that process, you do have a lot of these other landowners who are doing this willingly, who want to lease their land for all sorts of reasons that they would be best to address. Oftentimes I think that's something that the developer is going to work through. And then in the end, that's an issue that the Public Service Commission has to work through. They have an important job. They take it really seriously. And I know that's one of the things that is under consideration on all of these large-scale projects.
Talking with Brendan Conway of WEC Energy Group about a proposed solar farm in Dane County. Let's bring in Brady now, joining us from Onalaska. Hi, Brady.
Hi there.
Hi, I understand you're a solar panel foreman.
I am. I'm a solar foreman, and I'm actually on my way to install a ground mount solar system up in Eau Claire right now, similar to what you would have for those large-scale commercial projects, just a little bit smaller. I guess I just wanted to say a little bit about, you had some questions about land use and all that. You know, as you touched on before, people leasing the properties, it is a win-win for the landowner and the utility company that is putting in that system and generating electricity. The win-win, I mean, it's constant income for the landowner, and it kind of gives you a great image. But also, as far as land use, a lot of times to customers, I would recommend you know, what the other, we put in solar and then it's like, okay, what do we do underneath it? Do we just plant grass everywhere? You know, do we do something more natural? It's a great chance for local non-invasive species to really get back into an area. Something like prairie grass, there's many different kinds native to Wisconsin. Those are really nice for solar farms. It kind of strengthens that ecosystem around the area.
Yeah.
It gives a little opportunity for that.
Thinking about the landscaping around it, Brady, I want to ask you, how busy are you? How busy on the job are you?
This is, this industry is exploding. And, you know, the nice part about it is it's no longer the people that are really trying to save on the environment, although I'm a huge advocate for that. And, you know, I want to do everything we can do to reduce the effects of climate change. And solar is a great way to do that. But now it just makes sense economically. So really the people, there's so many farmers and residential homeowners and, you know, utility companies are doing large scale systems like this, even, you know, just solar, because number one, it just makes.
And Brady, you're breaking up there. Yeah. Thank you so much for calling in. I want to toss it back to Brendan here for a moment. And, you know, Brendan, Brady says solar is exploding. It's having this really important moment. And I would assume WEC Energy Group is really thinking about that in its mix.
For sure. I mean, we are already the largest investor of renewable energy in the state of Wisconsin. We have been for years. And in just the last few months, we announced plans, and this Koshkonong project is part of that, to invest more than $4 billion on clean energy projects over the next few years. Solar is a key component, also some wind and some battery storage is part of that. So it's incredibly important as we look, and I think as most people, right, through the Paris Climate Agreement, certainly the Wisconsin Climate Task Force has all looked at what do we need to do? All the utilities are on board. We're saying we're going to reduce emissions. We're going to move away from some of those older, less efficient fossil fuel units. And to do that, we need to build oftentimes new large-scale renewable energy like this Koshkonong project. And if we can't do that, then where else is that energy mix going to come from? Where else, when people need to turn on their lights and, you know, have their air conditioning running, how are we going to do that? And so it's a balancing effort that the Public Service Commission, I know, is considering. We're happy to be at the table and have that discussion with them.
Very quickly, because we're almost out of time, what about the loss of farmland, Paul in Eau Claire asks, as you look at this balancing act? I mean, because you're taking away farmland here.
So these are leases. So at the end of the lease, 20 years, maybe 30 years, the land can go back to the farm owner. You know, that's up. It's their land. They can decide what to do with it. And the good news is the land hasn't been farmed then for, you know, 20 years. So now it's going to be really fertile, really ready to be farmed. But we are still farming something, right? We're farming the sun. It's incredibly important to do those things. So each farmer, you know, who's deciding to enter these leases on their own, that's a decision that they're making and they're deciding what to do. Wisconsin farmers have been feeding the Midwest, feeding the world for a long time. In this way, where they're just now feeding customers in a different way.
Brendan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. Brendan Conway, spokesperson for WEC Energy Group, which owns We Energies and Wisconsin Public Service. Just ahead, we learn about the roots of reggaeton and the influence of Latin urban music around the world. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.